But the J.P. Morgans and the Blankfeins and Golden Mice Slacks of the world, they are owners of the Federal Reserve Bank of mm-hmm. New York, and they're so tied in with Congress and the Senate and the boys, they know that, I don't know, but they know that a Treasury Secretary is going to help them out?
Yes, they do. They? Yeah.
Even a Trump Treasury Secretary? Who is well, Mnuchin?
Mnuchin
would do that?
I mean, Mnuchin is at war, essentially,
oh,
with
good.
Trump and his policies.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he's trying to keep him in line.
Poor
he's
old
not,
Donald, man. He's got everybody
yeah,
against
he
him.
He does, yeah.
So he's got Sessions that doesn't like him. He's got Mnuchin. He's got he's got everybody.
Yeah, well, he's got a couple of cheerleaders in there. So I'm
not
hoping
a lot,
that
though, right?
He replaces the ones that aren't.
Huh.
But primarily as it relates to these trade deals.
Right.
You know, this is really where the big push is. And the longer this continues, the longer this drags out, the more credibility the president will gain.
Because even though the mainstream media is whining and all that about the trade deals are going to sink us all, you think long term, the president's going to come out looking like a hero on this?
Short term, he's going to come out looking like a hero.
Just because of more GDP.
Yeah, $700 billion is rolling into the steel business in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Mills are reopening.
Mm-hmm.
Steel workers back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to tell you that steel makers, that's a high-paying job.
And politically, you know, those people are critical in Ohio and places like that, you know,
yeah.
on the midterms and of course, 2020.
So I'm on this.
You're not stupid there, you know.
I'm in the brain trust of the Small Business Council with Jim Blasingame. So
I beg your pardon?
The guy's name is Jim Blasingame. He has a Small Business Council in which, you know, the farmers and the ranchers and the manufacturers and the merchants all kind of get together and talk.
Yeah.
What do we think? And straight across the board, man, manufacturers still support the president. Farmers and ranchers, and those are the people that the Chinese have aimed their tariffs at, they support the president.
Wow.
So everything that's being done to try to put pressure on the president to lift sanctions, business by and large supports him. And I can understand why. Do you believe this GDP?
I know.
GDP is greater. It's bigger than
tell folks about what's going on. So GDP is gross domestic product.
Correct.
Which means all the stuff that's sold in this country, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And
has increased. We're 4.9%.
Where was it during
One and a quarter.
Whoops.
And he told us get used to it. You know, if that's how it's gonna be.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said. The jobs aren't coming back.
Hmm.
That's it. So
I believed him, you know.
Well, and a lot of people believed him. But I didn't. I said that's nonsense. It's easy enough to turn this whole thing around, and you were there. You're a witness, as many of our listeners are, and thank goodness for the archives. You go back to the archives and you look at what I said when Donald Trump came down that escalator.
I remember.
Was like, hey, if this guy does what he says he's going to do, cut taxes on American business, then business will come flocking back to the United States, put tariffs on cheap imports, and then the export market will take care, the trade deficit will take care of itself. Those two things by themselves, without the third leg of the stool, which is the infrastructure program,
mm-hmm.
those two things by themselves would boost GDP instantly. And look what happened. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's basic mechanics.
And to be fair, too, you also said very clearly
mm-hmm.
that I don't care if Trump is elected or Clinton is elected. We're
going
to see a lot of inflation coming and a lot of debt.
That's
you know,
right.
They're going to be big deficits, and
correct.
You're right there, too. I mean, because, you know, this Trump White House, they're not backing down on the amount of deficits. It's almost going to be more.
Yeah. And,
in a way,
right?
Isn't it?
And that's when we got into the difference between productive inflation and consumptive inflation. Remember that?
Sure.
Where,
yeah.
Okay, Obama's inflation said, here, I'm going to give you a free phone. I'm going to give you a fish.
You're going to stay there. Watch Oprah and eat Cheetos, and I'm going to give you something.
Here's a fish. And Donald Trump's inflation is, I'm going to teach you how to fish. I'm going to enable you to fish. And so that type of productive inflation I can get behind. Consumptive inflation I can't. So everything that he's done with the economy has boosted revenue into the Treasury. And if that boost continues, more payroll taxes, more people working, lowest unemployment rate since 1969.
Yeah.
Is that an accident? Or as President Obama suggests, it's the result of his policies? That's absurd. This is the result of trade tariffs that rebuilt American business and put a lot more of the money into the pockets of American business, which allowed them to hire more people, which allowed them to pay more payroll taxes. That's what we need.
But isn't the stock market bubble and the bond bubble a real Achilles heel for the Trump administration?
Yeah, the bond bubble, I mean, more than anything.
Yeah, more than anything.
And I see
that
why
thing
he's,
blows, boy. He's going to get slammed like, ooh,
oh, yeah.
Watch.
Ooh, like ooh. Nobody's business.
Nobody's business, boy. They're going to have him on the mat.
That's right.
What's he going to do then?
Well, there's not much he can do if the bond thing blows.
Uh-huh.
This is why I've been so tenuous on United States bonds, corporate bonds.
I know
bonds,
for years, right?
Yeah. All the way down. You don't know where the bottom is. You can't catch a falling knife. But I think we can look back now and say, hey, that 2.5% 30-year Treasury bond, that sub 4% 30-year mortgage, that was the bottom of the interest rate cycle. And bonds will never be worth more than they were worth then. In fact, they've fallen in value since then.
Okay, give folks a short course on what a bond bubble is, so new listeners, and what we're talking about so we don't lose them.
So if you buy a 30-year bond, somebody is borrowing money from you mm-hmm. for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you loan them $1,000 and they're going to pay you 2.5% interest for 30 years.
Good.
All right. Well, now interest rates double and go from 2.5% to 5%.
And they're on their way up now, and it's going to be another quarter point today, you say?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So now you say, well, I don't want to hold this bond for 30 years. I want to sell it.
Because I can... My bond is becoming worth less because interest rates are rising.
Well, that's when you find out that it's worth less. Because
try to sell it,
right? You can't go back to the original purchaser, the original borrower, and say, never mind, here's your bond back, give me my money.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sell it to someone who will then hold it for 30 years.
Why don't you just keep it for 30? Oh,
that, well, you could do that.
Good, because you're only getting 2.5% money when interest
rates... Well, everyone else is getting 5%.
Yeah, that's not
exactly.
Good. Okay. Gotcha.
But you can hold it for 30 years and ignore mm-hmm. that you're losing half of what you could have gotten.
Sure.
But if you go to the secondary market and say, I want to sell this bond, what will you give me for it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, your bond yields 2.5% for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's got $1,000 face value.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give you half as much.
No, that's not good.
Right.
So you mean you'd go out in the market and only get
$500
for that?
Correct.
Just because the interest rates have doubled.
Correct.
Wow. How many of those bonds out there that people going to want to sell?
Trillions.
Really?
Tens of trillions.
Really?
It's a huge market.
What if they'd all sell at the same time?
Now, that's an even scarier prospect.
That's a problem, right?
Yeah, I think dollar-denominated debt worldwide is up to nearly $100 trillion,
mm-hmm.
97 last count.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if all of them decided, I want to sell these bonds before interest rates go much higher, then they're going to take an enormous loss.
Which is, I guess, maybe the recommendations they're getting from their money guys, their money people they talk to every day.
Yeah.
What should I do, George? Well, I would get out now.
Yeah, maybe you want to sell your bond now.
Uh-huh,
yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
Now, considering that everybody can't sell at the same time.
Because nobody wants them, right?
There's got to be a
buyer.
Then
the prices even go down, right?
They go down even further, yeah. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the mortgage-backed securities during the last crisis, Merrill Lynch sold its entire portfolio of mortgage-backed securities at 30 cents on the dollar.
Really?
Before they sold themselves to Bank of America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is the problem when you start playing with GMO money.
Yes, sir.
It just gets... After a while,
it loses its nutritional value.
I like it. Okay, thank you very much. It loses its nutritional value. You just keep.
You have to eat more of it to get the same amount of nutrients.
Just keep dinking around with it.
Yeah,
Dink around with it, man.
Yeah.
Wow. And they haven't learned either. Right?
No, they have not.
No.
As a matter of fact, what they've learned is that through genetically modified money,
mm-hmm.
they can make a heck of a lot more than dealing with organic money.
Of course.
You know, a fixed supply of gold, a fixed supply of silver that you could loan to people. That's it. That's all you get. And that's all. That you can only generate this much interest from this pile. Where they realize, just like an amplifier, with genetically modified money, they can... amplify their returns. Use the same dollar in four or five places at the same time. So, and again, like a game of musical chairs, as long as the music doesn't stop, no one notices cares, that there's right? only one chair. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's where we are.
Wow.
So let's hope the music doesn't stop, right?
Well, do you think President Trump has these kinds of conversations with himself? Does he? You think he can see big picture? Mm-hmm. He's got to, right?
Yeah.
He can't be. He's pretty smart guy. Yeah.
Real
so
smart
he just
guy.
Keeps on running and talking, right?
Yes, he
tweeting
does.
And talking and running and talking to everybody.
He's pedaling as fast as he can.
Did you see the press conference last night? I did not.
I did not.
Oh, I didn't either.
I heard the speech at the UN, though.
How was that?
Well, it'd be like going to the NAACP and expressing racist views.
Oh, you know? Good.
He went to the UN and said, damn globalism.
Really? Good for him, man.
And damn socialism. Look at what happened to Venezuela. Look what happened to Iran. And it's there, you know, that was just, I was very proud
he just went in there, huh?
Yeah.
And just talking about socialism and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys like socialism? Look at that.
Yeah, look what it did here. Yeah, exactly. If you like it, you're going to love it.
Argentina.
Right. So.
Wow. Good for him, you know?
Yeah. He went to the UN and bashed globalism. That's the thing.
Well, they are the globalists incarnate, man.
That's what
they are. That's what they do for a living.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how he did on the press conference last night. I don't have a TV, so I didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. It was a busy, long and busy day.
Probably all Kavanaugh all the time, probably.
Yeah, I think I had a 7:30 Fed Watch show in which it was, you know, well, the Fed meeting's starting. What are we going to do? What's he going to do? And basically my answer was, well, I will bet everything I've ever earned that the Fed is going to raise interest rates.
Yeah, sure.
It's just like such a foregone conclusion. They've done everything except erect the neon sign that says, we're going to raise interest rates. So I would be shocked if they don't. How about that?
Shocked. Per your comments on previous shows, writes Peter, you mentioned that the price of gold was kept low by short sellers.
Yes.
Eventually, these people or institutions would they have to get rid of their short positions?
Yeah.
Will this
short
not
covering.
Raise the price of gold significantly?
It does,
if the
yeah.
positions are closed quickly.
That's right. But see, this is why they manage their short covering, and they always front run it with a bunch of more shorts.
Now, wait a minute. Are you asking?
Okay.
Okay. So I got shorts, and I'm going to do what?
I'm going to double that position.
Rather than covering my shorts, I'm going to bet more money the gold is going to go down more?
Correct.
Huh.
Yeah.
Why would I do that?
Why? Because it will drive the price of gold down. Then I'll start short covering.
Oh.
And then in the midst of my short covering, I'll go short some more. And that's the high frequency trading. So I'm going to buy a bunch of gold. Now I'm going to sell a bunch of gold. Then I'm going to buy a bunch of gold. Then I'm going to sell a bunch. And I just keep going back and forth, trying to square my position, each trade taking another little chunk, like a ratchet. Remember I've used that analogy before? Like a ratchet. Crank, 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 whoom, power stroke. Crank, 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 power stroke. And this is how they've managed to suppress. And if you see this gold trading within specific ranges, as soon as it starts to move up, it's pushed back down. As soon as it moves up, it's pushed back down. That is the mechanism in work. So they are so short right now that this is a daily occurrence. So they high frequency or program trading, buying and selling at the same time and hoping to get the slight edge. You just got to knock people off their feet. That's the capitulation thing where people just give up and say, okay, that's it. The only people that are left now are the solid, sound money people like myself. The speculators, they're all gone. The hedge funds all gone. All those guys.
They're not in gold at all, are they?
They're just out.
They're out. But big countries.
Russia.
Russia and China.
Buying gold hand over fist.
Russia, China, and India. They're still buying a lot
of
gold.
But the thing is, I mean, you still need money to run your country. So the idea that you're going to take a portion of your gross domestic product and you're going to bury it in an asset that doesn't yield a return, it's hard for that to make sense.
You got to have the big vision, right?
I mean, even the last 2 years I've talked about, and now I'll reveal it completely because it's over, but the Swiss banks that held all of these $20 gold pieces since 1929 have sold them out. They're gone. We're talking millions gone. Of $20 gold pieces came on the market in the last 2 years and were absorbed. And so now, how did they replace that? Take a guess. Now, what did they replace those physical gold and silver coins with? Options. Contracts, futures. And they look at the benefits and say, look, there's no physical storage. We don't have to secure these things. And we can buy a contract or an option for a fraction of what. So, you know, you want to put away a million gold coins, you got to have $1 billion to do it. And if you want to buy 1 million ounces of gold in a contract, you can do that with a third of that much money or even a quarter. So to them, on paper, oh, it looked like a great deal. Sell all the physical gold and buy gold options and futures. And so you think about the ratcheting that has caused. My goodness. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your view, there are no more overhangs of $20 gold pieces on the market. They've all been dissipated. This was the last great hoard, and it's gone. It's gone.
And those all came from the Roaring Twenties, right?
Yes, the Roaring Twenties. And now the buyers, the last trip to Europe, came back nearly empty-handed. I mean, there's virtually nothing left to sell.
Because you keep track of this stuff, right?
Oh, goodness, yeah.
You keep track of it.
I have to.
Yeah, wow. It's quite a story, isn't it? All these from the 1920s, these things all ended up over there.
Yeah.
So much for wanting to have a dream of having a Swiss bank account someday. I guess I can let that one go, right?
Yeah, sure.
Back in the days, everybody wanted a Swiss bank account.
That was the thing, yeah. You had a Swiss bank account.
They were private.
Secrecy and privacy.
Right? They wouldn't tell anybody about your $10,000 you had in there.
Nope.
Now it doesn't matter, right?
Now they tell everybody. It's the opposite of that.
That's right. Oh, gosh. Jack writes in, anything with 1% or more of precious metals is reportable. Also questions about, let's see, what is he saying here? Anything with 1% or more of precious metal is reportable.
No, it isn't.
I don't know what he's saying here. What's
he saying? I don't know what he's saying either.
Okay, we'll skip that. Also, question about 1976 quarters. Are they collectible? This says the marching patriot soldier on the back.
The drummer boy.
Mm-hmm.
They call him the drummer boy quarter. And they came out 1 year, 1976. And from 76, but there's no silver in them. And, you know, only from a token point of view. So if you have a 1976 drummer boy quarter and you've held it since 1976 when it was brand new, I'll give you 28 cents for it.
Oh.
So, okay, that's a profit, but is it worth putting away? I don't think so. I'd rather have the Gettysburg half dollar from 1936 myself.
Is that what I don't
Yeah, it's made of silver, and there's a whole lot fewer of them in circulation than there are the drummer boy quarters, but they cost a lot more, too.
So we don't know what Jack is saying here. 1% or more precious metals. Not sure. But any time you buy and sell...
Just gold.
Gold, just stuff.
Just
it's all reportable.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, any profit severed from... What's that? What's the term?
No, it's the Commodities and Futures Trading Commission that sets what a commodity is. And so the general rule is anything that's good for delivery for a contract. So if I agree to sell you 100 ounces of gold, and I have to deliver 100 ounces of gold, COMEX and the Commodities Futures Trading Commission set the standards of what would constitute good delivery. You can't give me 100 ounces of chocolate gold coins. You know, it has to be 100 ounces of gold. And they set the standard. So, okay, it can be maple leaves, it can be Krugerrands, it can be gold eagles, it can be bars or bricks or blocks or Credit Suisse bars. What can't it be? Well, it can't be anything that's not on their good for delivery list.
Oh.
And if it's not on their good for delivery list, it's not reportable unless you sell it for cash. So if you sell gold and you get back more than $10,000 in cash, well, then that's reportable under a separate mechanism. If you sell your couch and you get more than $10,000 in cash, that's reportable. So those are cash reports that have nothing to do with whether you're selling gold, silver, or coconuts. It's a separate, entire category that really fits into the war on cash rather than anything else.
Speaking of the war on cash, this is pretty cool. Chief Executive Officer Jeff Bezos sees eliminating mealtime log jams in busy cities is the best way for Amazon to reinvent the brick-and-mortar shopping experience.
Right.
So they're going to have 3,000 kind of convenience stores.
Cashless.
By the end of 2021. They're going to have, like, good food, and you can get, like, you know.
Like the old cafeteria. Well, not
like
quite.
That.
I know. I'm trying to think of what the automats.
Automats. Yeah, this kind of stuff too. So here's the deal. What you do is you go in there and you do your little smartphone-y, kind of like a 7-Eleven, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Your little smartphone as you're going in, and then you just get whatever you want.
And walk out.
Smartphone app. You just grab what sandwiches, salads, snacks, drinks, whatever you want, and you just walk out. There's no lines. There's no cash register.
Nope.
And the thing just automatically figures it all out.
Yeah, well, they have two of them already in Seattle that are just going like gangbusters.
They seem to work, right?
Yeah, they work great.
Kind of fun. Because, you know, Bezos, he keeps seeing these people at lunchtime, you know, all lined up, and they only have, what, half an hour, 45 minutes for lunch.
That's right.
And they spend half of it waiting in line, you know.
And then the rest of the time, the store's empty.
What's up in line? Yeah. That's pretty visionary, really.
Yeah, no, that's what he's always been. He's a visionary. Yeah.
Now, it does cost a bunch to set this up. You know, it's a lot of technology. But he, you know, Jeff, he doesn't care about money spent. He'll just
no, he doesn't.
He'll just
he spends
spend the
it
money.
For the future.
Yeah, spends it for the future.
Now I recall when my book came out in 1996, Secret World of Money. Uh-huh. The first outlet that it was available, other than my own, was Amazon.
Right.
Amazon, and it
that's
was
how he started doing books.
That's how he just books.
Just
and,
books. Wow.
And he was doing such a good job at it that I let him sell mine, and he sold so many of them that it was the number one bestseller on Amazon and Money and Finance in the year 97. I still have my plaque.
I'll be done.
So I have no
that's
doubt
funny.
That yeah, it is for a guy like me, it is rather funny.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the an interview. I thought he was pretty clever, and he was saying how he. Those early years, I mean, he was packing books in boxes. That's what he did.
Yep.
I mean, you know, he started this company. Good for him, man. Now he's the richest dude in the world.
Yeah, he is indeed.
Wow.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. So I keep, you know, I'm beginning to vision, you know, the show Billions, right?
Yeah.
Where you have the Attorney General of New York trying to get the biggest trader, you know, on Wall Street in jail.
Correct, yeah.
It's almost like you're going to have President Trump and the new attorney general after he fires Sessions against Amazon, right? It's going to be this, the president really wants to kind of break these dudes up. Can he do that?
Yeah, I think he can. Mm-hmm. The antitrust laws are already in place. And you could easily make the argument that Google or Amazon or any of the others are violating antitrust. Especially if they're going to start suppressing certain points of view. So they're treading water as well.
Mm-hmm. And then again, you know, Bezos also owns the Washington Post, which
that's right,
which has not been too kind to the president.
No, it has not been kind to the president.
Do you realize? You probably know this, folks. Check this out. 0.1%. Well, easier said, 10% of the U.S. population owns nearly $93 trillion of all U.S. assets, and total U.S. assets is 107. When you take away the liabilities and the assets, right, you do the math according to the Fed's latest cash flow of funds report.
Yeah, but they don't see. I've heard this also, the separation, that it's somehow a balance sheet. It's not. That's total debt, with regardless of the value of the underlying asset.
So I lost you there. I thought they just do all the 122 million in assets and a 15.7 in liabilities. So it comes out to $107 trillion, right, in wealth. Isn't that correct? Is that correct?
Yeah, but when they're talking about assets, what do they measure?
I have no idea.
Right? Well, they measure what they have in the case of the stock market or the bond market or money in the bank. 401ks
and all that stuff.
But that's it. They don't measure anything else. They surely can't measure your gold coin collection. They surely can't measure your, you know, physical silverware and your jewelry and things that people have that are assets that don't show up on the Fed's reporting logs.
Are they measuring real estate?
As much as they can.
Uh-huh. So it's kind of a back of the envelope thing.
It is, boy, back of the envelope, yeah. But it is not a net worth of the United States.
But a lot of folks are kind of opining that this whole debt separation thing, I mean the wealth separation thing that's getting larger and larger, is kind of at the root cause of this whole populist movement around the country.
Right.
Do you think that is? people just kind of like saying, I mean, this populist movement thing is really, it is, you know, it's kind of.
Hey, tell me about it. I live here in the Northeast.
This Trumpism thing is happening all over the world.
You live in Austin.
Well, it doesn't happen in Austin.
It doesn't.
No, because yeah, okay. We're, you know, they're wacko. You know? All you see is Beto signs in Austin, man.
Yeah, Beto.
Beto, yeah.
Yeah, I do not like this. I do not like this Ted Cruz.
Oh, man, what's going on with this?
I'm
seeing Beto signs in Dripping Springs.
Sure.
There is a movement to get Ted Cruz out.
They want Ted out of there,
man. They want Ted out of there.
Look at his.
You think in a red state, though, like Texas, they're going to get him out? I don't know.
No, in a red state like Austin, they might get him out. I appreciate it, but, you know, that's there are those who have the point of view that you need a populist or a communist or a socialist to offset the power of the capitalist. That's their belief. But I don't think Beto would last 20 minutes without being corrupted in one fashion or another. The idea that these folks hold the line no matter what, it isn't the way it goes.
I was listening to NPR the other night driving home, and they ran that live debate between Beto and Cruz and out of Dallas. You know,
Ted mopped the floor.
Oh, he kicked his booty, man. It's just like he didn't... This guy is, he
has no idea.
He had
and
no
if
idea
it wasn't,
what's going on.
If it wasn't for the pesky Constitution,
no,
a lot of Beto's ideas would work. But doggone, that Constitution keeps standing in the way. And if we could just eliminate that pesky thing, then all the stuff that we think will work will actually work. You know, free health care, free college, free. Basic minimum income. You know, I've given a lot of that a thought to that basic minimum income thing.
Yeah, have you?
And there is a way.
I was kind of hoping I'd get one.
There is a way I would go along with it.
Really?
There is.
Really?
Yeah. First of all, it would be age limited. So, say between the ages of 18 and 30, you could get this basic minimum income.
Okay.
But you would have to pass a series of tests, and it would be graduated. Can you balance your checkbook? Here, pass this test. Okay, great. We give you another $10 a month. Do you have a skill? Are you a nurse? Are you a doctor? Are you working your way towards a skill? Are you getting good grades? Well, then we're going to boost you another. So make these series of milestones between the ages of 18 and 30 and increase their minimum basic income based on their life accomplishments. And then you could probably convince me that there should be some sort of a minimum basic income given to help our youth achieve their full potential. But to suggest that you're going to give a lifetime stipend to somebody who decides they're just going to sit on the couch for the next 40 years, that's not helping America at all.
It has disaster written all over it.
It encourages sloth. And I think we need programs in place to encourage excellence. You know, hey, be the best at what you do. What are you trying to do? You're learning. You're getting a trade under your belt. I'm amazed at the economic ignorance of 20-year-olds. Again, don't know how to balance their own checkbook. This is don't know how to get a mortgage, don't know how saving works, don't know anything except this electronic card that allows them to transfer money. So if you want to do this basic minimum income scheme, then you need to tie it to some sort of measurable milestones and tie the payments to that. If you want this, you got to do this. Then I think we might be able to work something out. But unless it's going to be tied to some sort of measurable outcomes, then I think it's a waste of time.
Cindy wants to know if you see this Kavanaugh mess as something that is really troublesome for this country.
Who wants to know? Is that Cindy?
Cindy. Is that your
My wife, Cindy?
I don't know. Let's see.
Like, Cindy, she you can wait till I get home and ask me.
Indiana.
We've had plenty of discussions on this subject, and I've had the idea. First of all, women know women, so you know what I'm saying there. The idea that I'm guilty and I now need to prove my innocence, the rule of law, I'm having a problem with that whole thing because, well, geez, if I'm going to be judged by what I did at 17, I'm in trouble. I can never do anything. I'm in huge trouble. I was the biggest, like, punk you ever want to meet at 17 years
really?
Old. Hmm. Yeah, yeah. Maybe by my early 20s, I had some degree of sanity. But at 17, holy cow, you can't even be charged with a crime in most instances until you're 18 because you don't know. Your brain isn't fully developed. So there, I'm going to try a 50-year-old man on what he did when he was 17. I think that's a problem. And then B, some hidden accusations from 30 or 40 years ago. I understand it's a hidden subject, a sensitive subject, one that's very underreported. I get all that. But goodness, I have four daughters. And I'm sure, you know, that what my daughters would do or how they would react if anything like this ever happened to them. I've seen it already, so I guess it's all in how you raise your daughters, folks. And I don't know, I just, I don't think he's getting a fair shake. I would look at his life from 21 until 50. And, you know, many of these other accused individuals, there's a whole string of people that come forward and say, he did this, he did this, he did this. And it's like a pattern that you can't hide. But this gentleman, I mean, he strikes me as the ultimate Boy Scout. We all knew the kind, the type. And he strikes me as that, not as some lech that is using his office to take advantage of law clerks or any of the hundreds of women that have come forward and said, he was my mentor, he did, you know, always the perfect gentleman. People from both sides of the aisle. So it's a balancing act. And I just don't think that the tactics being used, I get the desperation of the situation. Many on the left view this as a do or die type of thing. We're either going to dump him out or we're going to have a Supreme Court that's going to drag us back to the dark ages where, you know, women will have no reproductive rights and minorities will be treated shabbily again. I can't buy that. I mean, these folks are Supreme Court justices, by and large, have justice in their heart.
It's just, to me, it's a real conundrum of how do you even deal with something 25 or 30 years ago when somebody accuses something without, you know, you want to have somebody have a fair hearing, but
yes,
it just seems
the rule of law.
The rule of law, but I mean,
you don't bring evidence out, you don't make accusations unless you have solid documentary
have some kind
proof.
Of evidence,
something,
you?
Yeah,
shouldn't you?
Something. You're not going to name four witnesses and then all four of them go, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, give me one corroborating witness, it'll be good. I haven't seen any. There's a hearing tomorrow, so let's wait and see if there is a hearing tomorrow. But I think I've heard enough, and I could be wrong, but I think this man belongs on the Supreme Court. I would have no trouble putting him there, just as I had no trouble with Ruth Ginsburg, and that was the other side, right?
Yeah.
So if I look at the way that they were treated in their confirmation hearings, that's what I would expect for Brett Kavanaugh in his confirmation hearing.
To me, the most interesting thing is more philosophically, socially, what's going on with this push against it. It's
yeah.
such frenzy. And I saw a little video of some people in a restaurant. And they were...
Ted Cruz?
They actually were chanting something like, survivors need to be heard something. And they chased him out of the restaurant.
Ted and his wife.
Yeah. Just survivors need to be heard like Ted Cruz did. I mean, it's
like
just,
it was Ted's fault.
It's almost like witch hunt kind of 1800 stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, what has Ted Cruz got to do with survivors need to be heard?
Yeah.
And run him out of the restaurant? See, that's getting weird for me. I mean, that's getting really weird.
Would you call that bullying?
You think?
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay, but bullying is not good, I'm told.
It's not right.
Right. In fact, Republicans are being accused of bullying this accuser. They're bullying her. I'm not sure how, but that's what I hear, the left alleging that she is being bullied. Okay, I haven't seen the bullying. In fact, I saw Senator Grassley say, okay, we'll do this hearing in public, we'll do it in private, we'll do it in Washington, we'll do it in California, we'll do it off the record, we'll do it on the record. I mean, he offered every possibility for her to tell her story, when if we were bullying her, we'd say, shut up and sit down, the hearings are over last week. So I don't know. There's a certain lack of decorum and fairness that seems to be very one-sided here. So, and the rules of the Senate are, I mean, I flash back to the Spartacus moment, the Cory Booker using this hearing as a grandstand for his presidential run. I'm embarrassed. He's from my state. Well, I'm not from this state anymore, so I shouldn't be. I'm a South Carolinian. You know, go Tim Scott and go Lindsey Graham. Those are my senators now, not Cory Booker and Bob Menendez.
It just seems a shame what's going on. I don't know what the truth is. And
they passed these very strict rules in the Senate years ago. You know, they called it the Gentleman's Club. And aside from a few handful of documented, well-documented incidents, the idea that you always refer to my friend from so-and-so and the distinguished gentleman from so-and-so or gentlelady or whatever, that's all gone. You know, that senator from Hawaii saying men need to sit down and shut up, like we're all complicit in this. So I don't know. There's a battle, the division, divide, right? Divide and conquer. Oh, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, you're a man, you're a woman, you're black, you're white. So we all have to be divided. We cannot think of all of ourselves together as one America. And what Fred said in our commercial there, we're all Americans. At the end of the day, that's what we are. We're Americans, and we all have one thing in common. That's our money. So we better, like, focus on that and get off of all this small nonsense.
Andrew Gospatrick, Tim Pony. Please ask Andrew if he can talk a little bit about rental property.
Sure.
Why did he decide to own it? How long has he owned it? How many units and what kind of capital rent rate, cap rate?
Oh, I would say I was a modest rental investor, and it came probably when I was 20 or 21. I read a book on Andrew Carnegie, and Andrew Carnegie said that the key to his wealth was the judicious acquisition and disposal of real estate. And having a certain amount of skill, the idea that I could go into a decrepit real estate property and find the flaws and repair them and then gain from that sweat equity, as it was called, that was my MO. So I didn't just buy an up-and-running apartment building. I would buy a three-family house or two-family house and move into the downstairs and renovate it and then rent it and then move on to something else.
Wow, you'd eat dust for a while?
Yeah, I eat dust, eating it now. So yeah. That's, you know, part of what we do. So that's been my involvement in real estate. But as I've said before on this show, and I'll repeat it again today, 85% of my wealth is in gold and silver coins. The other 15% is spread amongst everything else, sort of the opposite of what I advise people to do. You know, you put 15 to 20% of your wealth in gold and silver coins and 80% in everything else. So for me, that's been the number one vehicle in my life. Real estate has its advantages and it has its disadvantages, but the thing I hated the most about being a landlord was putting someone out who didn't pay the rent.
Yeah, that's tough.
It just tugged at my heartstrings, and it always has. And I know you got to take the cold, calculated, like, I don't care, you have a wife, you have two kids, it's winter, you're starving, I need the rent. And so many times I would just, I mean, I literally have had folks go 6 months, 8 months, a year without paying me due rent. So I'm out of the investment real estate business. I'm tired of being a landlord. I'm just not in that mindset at this stage of my life. But for a 20 to 40 year old who's looking to build wealth, you count on both the reduction in the mortgage that the tenants pay and then the growth in the capital built on inflation. So the property increases in value while at the same time the tenants pay the mortgage. So it's a kind of a double-edged sword. So it's an amplification of real estate investment.
Can, just in your experience, big picture, can it work if you hire somebody to do all the stuff?
Well,
so you
one
don't
thing
have
I
to
learned,
have your, you know,
one
you're
thing
not
I learned
in the middle
by my
of it.
By my 10th year, one thing I learned was, hey, I'm just the manager of this real estate. And the owner says, you have to pay rent or move. So I just didn't reveal my position as the owner of the real estate. A lot of people want to do that. I'm just the manager of this real estate. And then the way that I look at it is it's not mine anyway. I'll be gone someday.
So you would have other people run the property?
No, I ran it myself, but I ran it as the manager.
The manager.
Not the owner.
Oh,
so,
I see.
Hey, I'm sorry that you're in this position, but the owner says if you don't pay the rent, you've got to move, and I'm the manager, so I'm the one that's got to put you out.
What about someone who wanted to kind of try to build some wealth through real estate but didn't want the day-to-day stuff?
Real estate investment trust.
Is it workable to, other than that, is it workable to have real estate property and have somebody else do everything, collect the rent, fix it up, do everything, and you're just not involved?
And
does the money come out?
9 times out of 10, you'll have a negative cash flow.
Oh.
And you can offset that through depreciation, but it just doesn't have the full effect of a actively managed piece of
real
estate.
But aren't you still theoretically hanging on to property that's going to increase in value?
Sure you are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
but big
not,
chunk,
not a lot of flow, though.
Yeah, a big chunk of the flow goes to the management, and you have to pay them regardless, even if the tenant doesn't pay the rent.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, that model doesn't work too well because somebody has to actively manage the real estate in a portfolio that's big enough, then that's affordable. And that's where I say, if you don't want to actively manage real estate, maybe you should look at a REIT, a real estate investment trust, in which you just own shares, and the manager of the fund takes care of all the dirty business that you don't want to have to attend to.
Well, speaking of real estate, there's some real kind of troublesome things.
Cracks. Yeah.
So what kind of cracks do you see in real estate before we go?
Well, the affordability index is out of sight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is,
well,
where
how many people can afford to pay their mortgage or buy a house? You know, it's as prices rise, it of course gets ridiculous. Here in Bergen County, New Jersey, a typical house now has broached that $500,000 mark. It's amazing to me, and I wonder how these young kids do it. So a great many just can't afford to own a house, and they have to be perpetual renters. Which is good, again, for the investor. I just think generally, though, as interest rates rise, the best deal that you're going to get on real estate if you're a buyer is when interest rates are at their peak, because most of the buyers have been crowded out of the market.
Okay.
The worst deal that you're going to get is when interest rates are at their trough or at their lowest point. And especially now, as people have seen these rate increases and are saying, okay, interest rates are going up. If we're going to buy a house, we have to do it now. That puts a whole lot more buyers in the market than would normally be there. And in a supply and demand market, obviously, price is going to be high. So prices right now have gotten ahead of themselves. And people paying it, I'm afraid, are going to find themselves unable to sell when interest rates hit double digits.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you buy, by the way, especially if you have a little bit of money put aside. Don't buy when interest rates are at their lowest point. Look, if you're going to buy a piece of a rental property and you're going to pay cash, you wait until interest rates are so high that there are no buyers, that you're the only one. That's when you're going to get your best deal. If you do it when interest rates are low and there's 10 times as many buyers, well, then you're going to find, due to supply and demand, that the price is going to be higher than it would be normally. So hold on to your cash. Keep your powder dry. If you're thinking of getting into real estate, you want to do that when interest rates are peaky.
Peaky.
Yeah.
What's Andrew? What is Andrew's prediction for the prices of gold and silver in the end of December this year? Oh, what is? He just wants you to predict now. Just two,
yeah,
3 months.
I give up.
Give up.
I honestly think I thought we would be in the $1,600 range. Needless to say, it's cost me a lot of money over the last 2 years. But one thing that I counsel my clients, and so I have to throw this caveat out there, there's not a single thing that I've been forced to sell. So while on paper I may have watched the price of my generic $20 gold pieces go down, I haven't been forced to sell. So therefore, if you have strong hands, you can withstand a downturn. If you're buying gold or buying silver coins with the idea that you're going to cover your spread this year and you're going to make money this year, I just put that out of your mind. If you're not thinking 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, do not buy gold and silver coins. It's just a horrible short-term investment and always has been.
Well, it's good for you to be honest.
Sorry.
Like that, you know?
Yeah.
Eric wants to know, what reason would the Fed have for keeping its gold inventory priced so low? Could it be that they are keeping their options open should they decide to do a confiscation without compensating at the market rate?
Yes, curious indeed, question. It could
so be. They have, what, 8,000?
Yeah, 205 million metric tons. 205 million
theoretically,
ounces.
We don't know for sure, right?
Right. It's not been an audit, so we don't know.
We don't know.
But they tell us, and curiously, they haven't added to that at all at a time when Russia and everyone else is buying, adding to their gold reserves. Right, right. We're not.
But the Treasury only puts it at $35 an ounce.
$40.22 is the official value. There was a court case where a person had five Krugerrands in their luggage, and they were lost, and they filed a claim, and the official value is $40.22. They fought, but the courts ruled every time, nope, that's the official value of gold. You're done. That's how much you get.
Mm-hmm.
So could they recall gold again, I think, is the question that the writer is asking.
Yeah, he's suggesting that, well, keep it at $40. So if they recall gold, that's all they're going to give you.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's unfortunate. But if you're a gold buyer, if you're holding gold as your investment vehicle, you might want to consider another vehicle.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you do the math, and I have my little calculator here, it's not all that much money. I mean, how many ounces in a ton?
2,000,
2,000 ounces in a ton?
Correct.
Times 40, right?
Oh, what are you talking about? The official value?
Value,
holdings.
Yeah.
The official holdings of gold is like a 1% cover to the money supply. I mean, it really is insignificant.
Yeah, that's what
right. It's not a lot of money.
Not a lot of money.
Really, I mean, relative to how many.
So there's 2,000 ounces in a ton?
Yeah.
Okay, times $40. I'm just doing it quick here, back of the envelope. I mean, that can't be right. 2,000? 2,000 times $40, right?
Yeah.
4.00 equals... I don't know what I'm doing, right? 80,000, that's not right.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
At $40 an ounce, that might be right, yeah.
I don't know, just calculate it. But it's not a great deal of money.
It isn't, yeah.
I mean, so, and even if you calculate up China and Russia's gold in dollars, it's not all that much, is it? It's just the fact that you have real money stashed away.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you're trying to figure it out in terms of current value.
Yeah, it was. I don't know why it's not working.
A ton of gold
is
worth about $50 million.
Okay, so let me do 50 million.
Yeah, that's easy math.
50 million times what? 8,000?
8,000.
8,000. 300.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go.
Sounds like $400 billion?
$430 billion.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know.
Yeah. Considering that...
It's not too much. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, well, when you consider that we have $35 trillion in money...
Yeah, what's $430 billion?
Right.
Okay, so a couple more here. I would suppose that them poison cherries is the likely source for the paraphrased old saying... Life is not always a bowl of cherry.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he's talking about...
Tyler.
Tyler, yeah.
Yeah.
So they really think, people think that he was poisoned?
Well, to the point that they, I think they even ordered an exhumation of his...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Believe it or not, you know that there's a grandson of him?
Really?
One of his grandsons is still alive?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went down to Virginia to see the plantation, and... was amazed to find that, there are grandsons of Tyler still alive.
I think they did the same thing, if I'm not mistaken, with Lincoln, you know? And they dug him up and everything, and they said, he's dead. Abe, he's gone. Yeah, they got him.
We checked.
Good morning. Would it be fair to say that, that's terrible, that if today's price of gold could be priced in $1,900, its price would be around $400.
Okay,
what's he saying here? Good morning.
Okay, so if you go to $1,900, I don't mean 1900 as in quantity. I mean the year 1900.
Yeah.
What a dollar was worth in 1900. Mm-hmm. At today's rate, would gold be about $400 an ounce?
Is that right?
No, I don't think so.
So what was this emailer getting at? Anything that we...
Not sure.
Okay, not you got to sure. be more. You have to be more. Let's see what else. We got a couple more here. The level of your success. Okay. Yeah, 32 ounces. 32 ounces
32.15.
In 1 ton, right?
So no, that's in a kilo.
It's in a kilo?
32.15.
No, he says 32,000 ounces in a ton.
What?
Is that right? 32 ounces in a ton?
Don't think so, do I know?
Yeah. A metric ton is how many kilos? How many pounds? It doesn't. Whatever. We think it's about $400 billion. Right?
Yeah.
Of course, we don't really know what they've got and what they don't have.
No, we don't.
That's the big problem.
That's really the issue why there are those that are calling for the Fort Knox.
Yeah,
you know?
Even though Mnuchin went there, remember?
Right.
I saw the gold. Yeah. I saw it. No problem.
From the sky.
Mm-hmm. From a guy like you, a libertarian, what do you think about this one? School districts in Clark County, Indiana, are going to be randomly drug testing students who want to participate in extracurricular activities like sports, band, and driving to school.
Random search.
What do you
and
think
seizure.
About this for you, libertarian?
Okay, here it is. Okay.
What do you think?
No search and seizure without a warrant.
Oh, you're not going to the Fourth Amendment, are you?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, well, yeah.
This is why we have it, you know. It's why we have it. Because otherwise, listen, what do we think about the idea of police going door to door and searching for contraband? Knock, knock, knock. Hey, I'm here to search a house looking for
Can
any contraband.
Can I look in your underwear drawer, please?
Yeah, you don't mind.
What do you got?
You got nothing to hide, do you? Oh, no. So, yeah, I'm opposed to that. I think the Fourth Amendment speaks to it clearly. And they tie it to the extracurricular activity and say, okay, well, you don't have to play football. You don't have to be a cheerleader. So, therefore, it's perfectly legit.
Oh, since you don't have to.
Right. It's your choice.
Oh, good.
So
that makes
you
me feel
choose
better.
To, yeah, to be drug tested. I am totally opposed to the concept. Now, on the other hand, if I have a student that's falling asleep in class, is stumbling around the halls, and, you know, looks like he's on drugs, okay, there's probable cause. Let's get a warrant and search and do a drug test of this person. Mm-hmm. But without probable cause to suspect that someone is committing a crime, there should be no search or seizure. And that includes driving your car on the highway, walking while black. You know, in New York City, they had the stop and frisk program. The police would just randomly pick someone and say, okay, up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe it? Perfectly like, oh, well, we need that. We need it. I'm opposed to it. And I think a lot of the oppression of young people of color is because of this idea, this mentality. Well, you know, you're not white, so you must be a drug dealer. That's the only reason you're in this neighborhood. So we're just going to stop and frisk you and search you. That is so contrary to the Constitution that I don't even believe that people, I mean, there are just certain basic precepts in law, you're innocent until you're proven guilty, and that is out the window. Now we suggest you're guilty, it's up to you to prove you're not. That's absurd. And, oh, you're just automatically assumed to be a bad person, so we want the right to search you and to search your property. No, that... We dealt with all this in this living constitution, 250 years ago.
And think about how different it is. Even in the 90s, when people were coming forward, you know, against President Clinton, say, well, he raped me, all these different people. There was nothing that nobody did anything about.
No.
Nobody even talked about it.
Yeah.
Now you have just people's
double standard.
Wow, it's just like.
Well, never mind that. Keith Ellison, I think, is he's the vice chair or the chair of the Democratic Party, the whole damn party, and he's running for attorney general in Minnesota. And his ex-girlfriend is telling anybody who listened that he's an abusive person, with evidence. So, what about that? Why is it not a two-way street? I hate these one-way street things. And, listen, I can't fault the left because they understand what's at stake here. You know, this guy on the Supreme Court.
Why are they so afraid of this guy?
Well, because they've made so much progress with this notion that the Constitution is a living document.
Oh,
and
yeah,
our forefathers could have never imagined the drug problem in the schools. So they would have never written the Fourth Amendment today. They would have, see?
Or they wouldn't have written the Second Amendment if they had
assault weapons. Right.
So this is where they're going.
That's where it comes from.
I see.
Once you accept that fact, and we're all supposed to accept it, then many of these rulings that the courts make that are contrary to the Constitution under the rubric that this is a living document. It's subject to the interpretation, not the plain language meaning, which is what Ted Cruz believes,
which is what Brett Kavanaugh believes. They're hardcore.
Which is what Donald Trump believes, which is what Lindsey Graham believes, which is what I believe, that the plain language of the Constitution lays it out, and now there is a mechanism for repeal. And if you think you're in the majority with your opinion, then all you have to do is get the majority of the people, the majority of the states, to agree to change the Constitution, and you can eliminate this outmoded provision. But until then, I think we should really respect and teach our children to respect the First, Second, Third, Fourth, and all the other amendments, and as well as the body of the Constitution. So when you tell a high school kid, oh, you can't play football unless you agree to this random search and seizure, totally contrary to what the Constitution teaches, well, then that's going to be their belief moving forward. Oh, well, government has a right to randomly search and seize my property.
Just in case I'm being a bad guy.
Just in case. So random search and seizure, not on the highway, not in the name of drunk driving, not to protect the children. No reason whatsoever should be, the Fourth Amendment, your right to be secure and your papers in effect, is sacrosanct.
It's pretty interesting. Not too many Rand Pauls of the world are kind of like your libertarian philosophy as well. Mm. He's been pretty quiet on all this.
Yeah,
I haven't seen anything. I wonder.
Yeah.
I guess he doesn't want to get in the fray. It's so
he
messy.
He wants to stay in the Senate.
It's just so like, I don't know what's going to come of this. So, and you think this constitutionalist guy is going to get confirmed?
Yes.
Do you think?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be protests? Will people be holding their breath until they're blue? Temper tantrums? Yeah, all that's probably on the mill as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no consequence. See, for me, I would have been the manager of that restaurant where Ted Cruz was accosted. I would have called the police immediately. And I would have, that was threatening behavior. I would have had those people arrested, thrown out of my restaurant.
I can't believe they were
allowed to do that. Exactly right. Any of you buying food? No, get the hell out of my restaurant. And if you have a table in here, get out of my restaurant. You go protest on public property. You have no right to just come into my place of business and start harassing my customers. Where was the manager of that restaurant? Where was the owner of that restaurant? Hell, Ted Cruz really showed enormous restraint by not poking somebody in the eye or calling the police himself. I mean, he's got his wife there. Why is she under assault? Yeah, I get it. She's Goldman Sachs. Maybe she's
Goldman Sachs.
She's due. But I just think the treatment that he received and that the others, I mean, there were quite a few others that received the same treatment. I believe the press secretary was denied service in a restaurant and so forth. I don't, as Michael Jordan so famously put it, Republicans buy sneakers too. I think taking
That's
a side is really insane as part of a business plan. But,
Republicans buy sneakers.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Where they said, why don't you condemn this president, Bush at the time? He's like, hey, Republicans buy sneakers too.
Are you a golf fan? Did you?
Tiger Woods?
I actually went online and figured out a way how to watch that thing. I actually signed up for a free trial of Hulu just so I could watch it, right?
Tiger Woods?
Yeah, and I watched Tiger.
Tiger.
Wasn't it great? I just thought it was
It's all about second chances.
Unbelievable.
Second chances.
It was just great.
Here you go. You can go into
millions of people chasing.
Yep.
It was
you can go into the depths of hell. And you know what happened to Tiger Woods, right? A cautionary tale. He got a medical doctor to prescribe him opioids for injury. That was what happened.
Oh, you mean back then when he went bonkers?
Yeah,
I didn't realize that.
That's right, yeah. it wasn't because he just decided to go out and suddenly, you know, start doing drugs.
Uh-huh.
He had a medical condition. A doctor prescribed
pills. Oh, yeah, because he had two different surgeries.
That's
two,
right.
Or three, huh?
And he abused them. So
I wish he'd come out and talk about that.
His dad and mom raised him right.
Yeah. I just thought it was so great to see that.
And me too.
And I saw a video that somebody ran, and they showed a picture of Tiger. I put on my Facebook that Tiger Woods was watching it, and they had all these clips of all these people over the last 5 years.
He's dead, it's over,
he's never going to win. And he was watching it on his little
laughing thing.
Sure. And then, you know, he just smiled at the end. And
yeah,
I put
like
that
President
on my Facebook
Trump.
Page. Yeah.
That's a pretty good post there, Patrick.
That was great.
Because I don't care where you find yourself right now. If you're listening
you can always
to this,
come back, man.
That's exactly right.
Always come back.
The change is on you.
Yeah.
And that's why I think things like, you know, Kanye West said slavery is a choice. You remember that?
No, not so.
Oh, he caught a lot of heat for that. Where he said, well, slavery's a choice. You choose to be a slave. That's it. You can do something else. More eloquently put, because I've never thought that Kanye West was the most eloquent person. But this Frederick Douglass quote, right? The limits of tyrants are prescribed by those whom they oppress.
Ooh.
If you're going to tolerate this nonsense, then it's your fault. It's not their fault. That's his view. I think that's Kanye's
view. Say that
view.
Again. Who said that?
Frederick Douglass.
He was he ran against Lincoln, right?
He was a freed slave. Wrong Douglass.
Oh no,
Frederick
that,
Douglass
not, not
was.
Douglass.
Okay. Yeah, he was a freed slave.
And what did he say?
The limits of tyrants are prescribed by those whom they oppress.
Ooh, man.
Their limit.
That's pretty heavy. Huh?
That is heavy.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, if you're being oppressed by opioids, it's your choice. If you're being oppressed by any other drugs, that's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is abusive to you, that's your choice. That's the way, people say, oh, he made me feel or she made me feel this particular thing.
Right.
I'm in charge of that. Nobody else makes me feel anything. I'm in charge of what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to own it. You have to take responsibility for it. If you're feeling a particular way, it's not because somebody else made you feel that way. It's because you choose to feel that way. So Lincoln also, right? I believe people are about as happy as they make up their mind to be.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
Good for him.
I mean, isn't there some truth to that? It's up to you whether you tolerate something that is damaging your psyche or your physical well-being.
Lincoln also understood karma, the whole thing about paying back somebody money that he owed him with the penny thing and all that.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Yeah. He was a pretty spiritually evolved dude, even though he had his issues.
Even though he was a railroad lawyer.
That's right. I'll tell you a quick story before we go. I met a kind of a casual friend, a really nice man, very well-respected. I met him at the store, and he introduced me to his daughter, and she was all gushy, saying she just got engaged, you know. So I was kind of kidding her, and I looked at the dad, and I said, do you approve of, you know, the boy? You know, he said, oh, yeah, he's a wonderful guy. And as he was walking away, he said, and we drug test him every couple months.
So
it was great.
Yeah.
And she just laughed and poked him and said, Dad, you do not.
Yeah.
That's right.
My first daughter being married.
Of course,
every one of the boyfriends, you know, was always about, hey, you're the boy. Oh, you want to see my gun collection? Here, come, let me show you. This one shoots
you
people. Oh yeah, that was and everybody. Dad, come on. Okay, so the first one
wanna see my gun
wakes
collection.
Me up at 7:30 on a Sunday morning.
That's hilarious.
I'm on my way to church, but before I go, I wanted to have a conversation with you. I said, okay, come on in at the kitchen table.
He was on his way to church.
He's on his way to church,
you
but before he goes, right, you got to love this guy, which I still do. So he's going to sit down at my kitchen table, and he says, I'd like to ask you for your daughter's hand in marriage.
Hmm.
And I looked at my wife like, am I in the 18th century?
Isn't that cool?
No, but it was what he came to expect from me. I was so involved in my daughter's lives, I tried to make it a point to know who their friends were, who their friends' parents were, where they were, what they were doing. The idea that you can let your kids raise themselves, folks, I'm here to tell you that doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
So now my fourth daughter is engaged to be married in December. She is not pregnant. She is not forced, as none of the others were, to get married. It's just a choice that she's made after a long courtship. She didn't move in. You know, this all is something that's, you're going to move in, have kids, then get married. You know, it's a little backwards to me. And my girls were raised with the idea that a marriage is a lifelong commitment, not the idea that, oh, I'll give it a try. If it doesn't work, you just get a divorce and marry somebody else.
Hmm.
I think that's led to the destruction of our families in America. So respect for marriage, respect for institutions, I think is very important to teach your children. And I've tried to teach mine, and I hope they'll teach theirs the same thing.
Yeah, I got engaged to be married one time, and not too long ago, well, some years ago, and I did the same thing. I asked the dad.
That's the way to do it.
And he was just really, he looked at me and said, well, I'd be very proud if you did that.
Exactly.
And it was just great. You know,
I couldn't imagine myself.
I knew it was the right thing to do. I don't know why.
I couldn't imagine myself rejecting this proposal. But yet every subsequent spouse, you know, that was number one. Number two did the same. Number three did the same. And now number four also did the same.
Well, that's because you had a gun collection.
Maybe. Maybe.
No, I'm just kidding.
I showed them my concern for my daughters.
Right.
And so as maybe the person that was most concerned about my daughter's future, then they respected that, because so many parents are, you know, don't have no concern for their kids. If you want to get married, yeah, go ahead, do what you want to do. And so anyway, that is really, if you're raising kids today, please be involved in their life. Know who these people are, who's influencing your kids' thinking, and
sure,
try to do a little influencing of your own.
Do a little lobbying on your own.
Yeah.
Well, brother, it's always fun talking to you. We had a great time this morning. We got a little history for an hour and then dug in some cool stuff. I hope you all learned something. And just keep in mind that we have, well, 10 years worth of shows in archives. If you want to learn some more, you can, well, I used to be able to say you burn a CD and listen in the car. Now nobody even does that.
What's that? Right?
Yeah, you just get
download the MP4 or an MP3.
And just listen to it in your car, right?
Yeah, play the digital file. Hmm. Oh, and my email address is andy@andygoss.com. Direct all your hate speech mail to me.
Andy at andygoss.com.
And I have to issue an apology.
Huh.
We talked about the CDs, the free CDs that I've been giving.
Yes,
away.
We have.
And there were a few unfulfilled requests.
Oh.
I apologize. We ran out, but we've replenished our supply. So we have the three free audio CDs, the Federal Reserve, the Definition of Money, and Protecting Your Wealth, 3 half-hour CDs that you can learn and get an education from. And then a series of pamphlets, which we didn't run out of. We still have those, as well as information on gold and silver coins. And if you'd like to talk to someone about this, in the United States, on the phone, as I like to do, you can call us and we actually talk to you. No prompts to push, and none of that. No online anonymous transactions. Just call 800-468-2646, and a human will actually talk to you. Again, no electronic ordering here, no e-commerce at my firm. And I guess I'll be one of the last standing, because I just think it's the most impersonal way to do business. I just don't go for it.
I really most enjoy, though, I'm disappointed, because if your people that answer the phone speak English, I really like talking to people that can hardly speak English. It's just so much fun.
Do you enjoy that?
Do you believe that they do this?
I know it.
I can't believe that. I won't even mention their names.
Yeah.
And God love them. I'm sure they're nice people, but
I'm sure they are.
Just don't know. They don't speak English.
And they have no idea.
What you
English
want.
Culture,
yeah,
American
it's
culture.
Just, I think it's mostly India, right? Mostly India.
Philippines.
Is it Philippines?
Philippines.
I can't believe corporations do this to save a few bucks.
Save money.
I don't get it.
They don't realize the impact.
Yeah.
And many times it's when customer service is the last thing on their list. For us, it's the first thing on our list.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, maybe we're dinosaurs.
No
e-commerce.
That's the winner, baby.
Physical.
That's the winner, first
no
thing.
No futures and options and contracts and no.
Yeah.
Physical possession. If you buy something from me, I mail it to you. It's in your hands, in your physical control.
And if there's a problem or any kind,
you call me.
Deal with it.
And ask for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't hide. As anyone out there can attest, if you call SDL, you're looking for me. It might take you a minute, but I'll get to you. I promise. There's no way that you're going to request to talk to me and I'm not going to talk to you. It's not going to happen.
Hmm.
My phone list is long, but That's part of what I signed up for. I'm customer service is my business. That's what we do here.
Well, that's the deal. That's the number one thing, right? You can't. You just don't lose.
Well, not the cheapest guy on the block. No. I mean, to be fair, if you already know everything you need to know, you know what you want, you know where to buy it, then go buy it. You don't really need me. But if you don't, if you want a little bit of guidance and somebody to make sure that your order goes from start to finish the way it's supposed to, well, then that's exactly the model that I've put in place.
Well,
so give us a call, 800-468-2646. Even if you're not buying anything right now, you need to get an education, get those CDs. And my folks are absolutely, they go out of their way to educate you and to let you learn before you buy. I know in this day of high pressure sales, I put a stop to it instantly as soon as I get a wind of it. It's you make sure the folks understand what they're doing first. Then you could tell them what a great coin this is or why they should buy it.
Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. Well, we love you, Andy. Thanks. Say hi to everybody, and we'll see you next Wednesday. It'll be October.
It will. October, we call it.
October. Yeah, October.
Yeah, because it's October, November, December. It's over, you know. So, yes, the 1st of October is coming up, and that's sort of the end of the year, isn't it?
And the trees will start to, leaves will start to fall.
Yeah.
All right, kiddo.
I do have the answer. What will gold be December 31st?
Oh, that the email or ask what's going
to be? It will be yellow.
It'll be yellow.
I guarantee it's going to stay yellow.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot. We'll see you soon. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, The Real World of Money. I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support. I'm just really honored to be able to make a living doing this, and because it's so much fun, and I can wear my shorts, and that's kind of cool, but we are going to do the video thing soon. I'm getting some lights. I have some lights here. Got some reflectors. So got some cameras we're playing with. So we're going to eventually get into video because not everybody's doing video. So we got to kind of stay current. And I know the video killed the radio star, but I'm willing. So we're going to figure that out and see how to stream it and all that and get on YouTube and get some more people listening and have some more fun. So I can shave. It'll be fine. I will see you tomorrow with Richard Massey, Meridian Grace, and may the blessings be.
Know the Source on One Radio Network.